Greetings, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that unquestionably challenges you to think outside the box of convention and to explore with me and my great guests the many other possibilities available in the free thought zone. That's where we will journey to today during the program. Everything is available to us. No holding back. We are not mainstream. We are the alternative truth, and thank you for being part of that truth. So stay tuned. Here we go. Get ready for another hour of out there information. And out there I am, here in the Azores Islands, which I believe is unquestionably Atlantis, and I will soon be talking to you about that. But for the moment, hello, this is Patricia Corey. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box. That's my theme, and I'm sticking to it. So I welcome you, and all of you who are newcomers to the program, please pay attention to the hours. They change every week. I have alternative schedules. So this is the 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time show. The week after next week is 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I rotate back and forth so that I can reach as many people as possible. All righty. Well, as I said, here I am in this paradise of an island somewhere between two continents, the European continent and North America, and it's the best kept secret in town, and I should probably let it stay that way. But I have an event coming up here. People will be swimming with dolphins and celebrating that Atlantic connection, and it's very exciting. Meanwhile, speaking of exciting, I've brought you today someone very special. His name is Andy Thomas. If you've heard him before on my show, you already know that. Andy is a veteran crop circle expert, and he's humble enough to say, well, I don't like being called an expert, but he is. He's humble. He's a researcher. He is balanced between the left and right brain, and just a very engaging person. I'm very pleased to have him in my collection of wonderful people, of inspired people. And he has been on the show before. He has spoken to my groups in England. And I'm delighted to have him back today. We're going to be talking about his new book. Conspiracies is the name of the book. The facts, the theories, the evidence. And as you know, I've coined a phrase all by myself. It's no longer conspiracy theories, it's conspiracy reality, and I have a feeling Andy will agree on that. Before I bring him on, I just want to give you a little bio on him. He's one of the UK's leading researchers into unexplained mysteries and conspiracy theories. His books include an acclaimed work called The Truth Agenda, which explores paranormal phenomenon, global cover-ups, and prophecy. And another, Vital Signs, which is a wonderful book, that a definitive guide, I should say, to the crop circle phenomenon. I want to also say that what I love about Andy is he never really pushes the agenda as to what the crop circles are, who made them. He always delightfully allows the experiencer to have their own experience. And this is something that I find very engaging about him. He is the, believe he's the organizer, but I might be wrong, of the Glastonbury Symposium, where I've been delighted to be a speaker twice in Glastonbury. He is a very involved person, and today he's going to talk about this book, Conspiracies, which is, I've got it in my hands. You might hear me ruffling the pages. There isn't a conspiracy here that isn't covered. Well, I'm going to ask him if there's a new one since he wrote the book. So without further ado, hello, Andy. Thank you so much for being back on the show.
Hello, Patricia. Well, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for putting up with my confusion on the time schedules, but I'm in every time zone imaginable on planet Earth, and I just get confused.
That is fine.
So I'm sitting here. Thank you for sending me the book. It's a wonderful book. I love your style of writing. I love the clarity that you work with and the incredible knowledge that you bring forward in everything you do. Honestly, you're a wonderful researcher, and I love the balance, as I said earlier, between the sense or the intuitive sense of things and the logical, researched information. So that's what we'll be talking about today, the balance between these two poles.
Well, I think that's right, because there are sort of so many different extremes that you can go to. And sometimes those people that try to keep the balance and stay in the middle, they're the ones that get attacked the most, funnily enough, because all polarities, they want you in their camp. But sometimes I think to get to the truth of something, you have to try to stand in the middle and be aware of all ideas, all possibilities. And that doesn't mean you're being non-committal. It means hopefully you're being open-minded and open always to hearing new things and trying to see the truth of what's going on rather than just sticking to your dogma.
Yeah, I think more than ever now, as things are becoming, we all agree, I think, that the secrecy is being torn apart, the wall is crumbling down, and we are beginning to see things for the way they really are. And I'm delighted to say that it appears that more and more people are starting to get it. Wouldn't you agree?
There's no question there's been a real breakthrough in the last few months. I mean, it's sort of really come out big time with this whole thing about the PRISM surveillance centre and all of that. But it's funny, here in Britain, we've had a lot of revelations. Certainly over the last year, we've discovered that some of our favourite TV presenters were paedophiles, very sadly. And we've also had a lot of cover-ups being suddenly revealed. There were, some people may not know this, but there was a huge disaster in a football stadium at a place called Hillsborough many years back, and there were accusations of cover-up for years, which, of course, that the police denied. And then it all comes out that there was a cover-up, and indeed they hadn't told us the truth about what had happened. Now, that might sound minor, but what it did, certainly for people over here, was make people think, hang on, maybe the kind of things that conspiracy theorists, as we must call them, are saying, maybe there's something in it. And now they hear that, you know, potentially all their phone calls and emails and all of that are being monitored as well. Obviously, it vindicates those truth seekers who've been trying to say this for years. And so here is an opportunity to broaden out the debate and say to people, well, there's much more where that came from.
Yeah, and what do you say to the comment that I certainly get a lot, which is, well, if what you're saying is true, why aren't you dead yet? Because you've certainly got, I giggle when I say this, conspiracies, because there is nothing held back here. This little book is going to agitate definitely some, let's say, insiders. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you can't live your life forever afraid. Fear is the tool that those who wish to govern, you know, by this ruling elite, you know, whatever you want to call them, fear is what they do. So if we start becoming fearful of saying the truth, then they've won. And you can't live your life like that. And to be fair, what I'm saying, what I'm trying to gather together in this book, Conspiracies, is nothing you can't find out anywhere else. But the difference is it's all between two covers. And this is the thing, really, I can't see why anybody would want to take out anybody who's just basically sharing the information that is already visible, but it's a question of making people realize it's visible and giving it a context in which they can understand the whole picture of what's going on. People often, they tend to hear bits and they don't get the whole picture, but that's what I'm trying to do with the book. So, you know, if anybody was going to try and take me out or do something horrible to me for that, well, I'm sure there's other bigger people they would attack first, so I'll worry then.
So what would you say if you could discuss a thread, which you and I think we're both on the same page with everything you've brought forward here, starting, I think, one of the most important pieces of information that people really need to understand the One World Order is the staging of the Pearl Harbor incident. And a lot of people refuse to believe this or are just – it's just too frightening to embrace the idea that that was – a stage for the United States to get involved with World War II. What would you say about that? And can you enlighten people as to how that played out and how it's been proven to be a reality?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at the Wikipedia entry on Pearl Harbor, you will discover there is you know, an entry that says something on the lines of no serious scholar really believes that Pearl Harbor was either allowed to happen or engineered to happen. Well, that's, I think, a bit disingenuous, because in fact there are many researchers looking back at those events who have dug up a lot of evidence to show that at the very least, the attack on Pearl Harbor was expected, but no action was taken. And at the worst, it was deliberately provoked. And certainly there were people at the time, there were people like Vice Admiral Libby, who was obviously pretty high up the ladder, who even at the time considered that it had been allowed to happen. And indeed, he said something like, "I will go to my grave convinced that FDR, i.e. Franklin Roosevelt, allowed or ordered Pearl Harbor to happen. He must have known." That was the quote. And that's pretty damning stuff. And there are other quotes from other people who were certainly involved at the time. So, you know, whatever the alleged serious scholars say today that Wikipedia mentions, you know, it was pretty well known at the time that the New World Order, this is the phrase we use today, maybe needed America to come fully into World War II. But certainly, even on a basic level, you know, there were people who thought that America should be, and Roosevelt was clearly one of them. Obviously, there were a lot of business interests in Germany. That was very difficult for some companies in America, and they needed the event to take them into the war. So, you know, there's a lot of good reasons why they would want something to happen that would draw them in. And of course, that has resonance with a similar event in World War I, when the Lusitania was sunk. Now, that was an American liner, which again, when it was sunk by a German U-boat, played a big part in bringing public opinion into America supporting the war, which up to that point they hadn't. And there again, and the book explains this and explores it, you find pretty stark evidence that Lusitania was deliberately left vulnerable. The warships that would normally escort it into British waters suddenly vanished. They knew very well there were U-boats there, and down it went. And then you find this marvellous quote from Winston Churchill, who more or less says, well, you know, we could do with some of our shipping getting into trouble. And that gives you the impression that he really was just waiting for a ship to go down. And given that he was First Lord of the Admiralty at the time, was he the person that gave the orders to take away the escort of the Lusitania? Well, that we can't prove, but certainly you begin to realize that figures that are great heroes in most histories, in the conspiracy world, they're very often not. They are seen as the people trying to create this new world order. So Pearl Harbor and the Lusitania events do seem to fit that pattern.
Didn't Roosevelt's granddaughter, I have a vague recall of this, didn't she confess to Clinton that Roosevelt wrote the speech the night before it was attacked?
There are rumors of this that I couldn't confirm or deny, so I don't know whether that's true or not. But certainly, you know, it's just another layer which certainly needs more investigation. But obviously, the problem we have is nobody wants to believe this alternative version of history is true, because that's threatening, and that then it seems to insult the memory of people like Churchill and Roosevelt, who many people look up to as heroes who saved us. But this is the problem. Sometimes when you're trying to get to the truth of something, you have to be prepared to challenge the history books, and you have to be prepared to look again at reputations, and it's not comfortable. And I think this is why some people shy away from conspiracy theory. But the fact is that there it is, there's all this evidence, and it needs to be discussed and it needs to be made aware of, so that we can spot these patterns if they happen again and try and stop them.
And they have happened again. One only needs to think about Iraq and how after the so-called attack on the Twin Towers, suddenly George Bush announced, if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists, and we will go after any country that either has terrorists or, what was the word he used, hosts terrorists, which gave the America free ride to basically attack any country. And suddenly this convoluted situation happened where America was at war with Iraq because supposedly they housed terrorists Then it was another question. It was about weapons of mass destruction. Sorry, destruction. And in no time, nobody really knew why we were going to war with Iraq.
Well, I mean, that is something, I mean, which, again, I cover in the book, and I've written about before in my other book, The Truth Agenda. I wrote quite a bit about the Iraq situation, because that's very telling. Because there is no question that the weapons of mass destruction scare, which is what in the end took America and Britain and other allies into invading Iraq, it was made up. It clearly, people knew it was made up at the time, which is probably why Dr. David Kelly died when this UN weapons inspector came forward and said, they are basically exaggerating this. He was an embarrassment. So, you know, he was found dead in the woods one day. But the reality would seem to be that the wounds that he had supposedly self-inflicted couldn't have killed him. There wasn't anywhere near enough of the drugs in his bloodstream to have killed him. And the evidence is very strong that Kelly was indeed murdered, because they didn't want the script, the narrative that was taking us into the war in Iraq, to be in any way altered or shifted. I mean, basically, there was so much that was wrong with that setup. I mean, it's worth bearing in mind the alleged links with Iraq and 9/11 were very, very weak. And much of it was based on a claim that Mohammed Atta, who was supposedly one of the 9/11 organizers, had been seen in Iraq. And Dick Cheney himself went on record as saying this, except for that's provably false. We know Mohammed Atta did not go to Iraq. And yet, even today, apparently, if you run polls, a lot of people think Iraq was behind 9/11, never mind bin Laden and Afghanistan. So they managed to sow enough doubt in the public mind that, you know, they could make enough link to justify all the action that took place there. But, you know, this, I'm afraid, is an old pattern. And if you want to go back to previous Iraq action, as it were, when Kuwait was invaded by the Iraqis in the early 1990s, one of the key things that really swung public opinion, and again this pattern repeating, was the account that a young girl gave of a hospital that had been invaded by Iraqi soldiers as they were coming into Kuwait City. And allegedly they had smashed open the incubators and killed the babies, except it was a story that nobody else could confirm. And it's pretty clear today that if that ever happened, this girl did not witness it. And in fact, it turned out she was the daughter of the basically the Kuwaiti ambassador to the US, who had effectively, it would seem, stood up and made these claims because it was good war propaganda rather than it really being true. And in the end, it soon became clear she had not witnessed anything of the like at all. So it's quite shocking, but unfortunately, we're often led into very false situations. And this happens again and again throughout history.
Well, sure, because the mass mind is massaged into believing the story, and as things go, people just completely forget the whole approach, the whole storyline. How we got from the Twin Towers and bin Laden to Iraq is a blur in people's mind. And then the embarrassment of Colin Powell trying to stand there with his little map and justify they had discovered weapons of mass destruction. A destruction was at best an embarrassment.
This again raises a point, which is that when you stand back and look at all of this and you see these patterns repeating, it's actually very weak. It's quite astonishing just how little the public needs to make them go along with something. And yet that's not the same as giving their wholehearted support. I mean, let us not forget, before the invasion of Iraq, there were millions of people around the world who took to the streets who did not believe the weapons of mass destruction story. And they made their feelings known. So it wasn't as if the whole public was fooled. But I think the fear, that little bit of fear of, well, but what if these weapons are there? What if they can be deployed against us? It enabled the resistance just to crumble enough that those in power could do what they wanted, and then we didn't go out of our way to stop them. But that's not the same as anybody ever really believing it. Nobody believed it before, and when it was clear the weapons weren't there, plainly nobody believed it afterwards. So this is something else we see again, even with things like 9/11. And, you know, it's still quite remarkable how many people don't seem to know the alternative story on this. But, I mean, I thought it was very interesting. When we had the 10th anniversary of 9/11, there were various polls conducted around the world. And it turned out that around 50% of the world's population, when you put all the polls together, do not believe the official story of 9/11. And that's pretty astonishing, because that's a lot of people. It goes to show that the propaganda which the media puts out, which only ever tells the normal story we hear, doesn't actually work. And that there are people out there who do have their own minds, who see what's going on. And this is something I think that is encouraging. There are people out there who, in fact, can very quickly see the reality of what's going on if they're given an opportunity to. And I mean, I write books, but I also give a lot of lectures, and often to mainstream groups, people that don't necessarily come across this stuff in their everyday life. And it's quite remarkable that they might start off being a little bit skeptical, but usually by the time you finish just giving them a few examples of where the public gets misled, it's amazing how many people will come up at the end and say, you know what, I'd always thought that really, but I didn't know anybody else thought it too. And that's the key. And that's why we need to keep spreading this awareness beyond our own kind of, you know, immediate circle, getting it out there, because some people, yeah, they suspect there's something wrong, but they need the go signal. They need to see that others are there so that they then don't fear ridicule.
Well, as one of my friends said, Patricia, you just can't keep laying this on me. And I said, I'm not laying anything on you. I'm sharing with you what I understand. He said, but I can't embrace this, because if I do, my whole world will fall apart. I said, good, let it.
Said, yeah, that's exactly the point. World, and people don't want that.
America, my whole understanding. And I said, well, first of all, it goes beyond America, so you can let go of that. And secondly, so let it fall down. You can rebuild something based on truth rather than fantasy.
Well, I think that is so true. I mean, this is the thing, is that people are afraid. If you believe, or one believes, that, say, 9/11 was perpetrated by somebody on the inside, you know, obviously that suddenly makes you feel very afraid, because, you know, somebody killed 3,000 people that day. And if it wasn't Middle Eastern terrorists, then you think, well, hold on a minute, those same people must surely still be pulling the strings today. So that, of course, then pulls the rug on your feeling of safety in your own world. People don't want to go there. I often find people that reject the conspiracy view do so out of fear that it might be true, rather than doing so because they don't really believe it. And there's quite an important difference there.
Right, because if you do understand that it's true, you are then put in a position where you have to take a stand. You have to get out of your comfort zone and take a stand, or else take the blue pill and go to sleep forever. And so it's very challenging for people. It's much safer, as we know, to just stay in that nebulous place where you don't have to make that decision. But what's beautiful that's happening now is enough people are rising. The planet is rising. There can be no mistake about that. And so we're looking at this, you know, Illuminati plan crumbling and them clinging and becoming more diabolical every day. And it's having an opposite reaction, as far as I'm concerned. That is, that instead of squeezing people into silence, they are waking people up by the pressure.
Well, there's a quote from Thomas Paine, who many listeners will know. For anybody who doesn't, was kind of a very influential writer when the American War of Independence was going on. And indeed, funnily enough, lived for a while in the very town I grew up in Lewes, in England. But anyway, I mean, he had a very good quote. He once said, and if I'm remembering this right, he said, "We are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth. For my part, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it." And I think there's a lot of sense in that because, you know, one of the analogies I've made before is if you've got a blindfold on and you're running very fast, sooner or later you're going to hit a wall. So why not just lift the blindfold a little bit and see the wall coming and avoid it? You know, this kind of feeling that some people have, oh, I'm happier if I don't know what's happening. Well, that doesn't mean that sooner or later the effects of any kind of, you know, nefarious goings on aren't going to reach you and your family one day. So surely better to know. And then, yeah, get out there, get the conversations going, spread this awareness. And what you said earlier on is very important. When you become aware of this kind of information, if you're really concentrating, a responsibility comes with it. Because this isn't just something we all toy with and talk about for a jolly laugh. I mean, the whole world of conspiracy theory is essentially rather worrying and shadowy. That's the nature of it. But therefore, you have a duty, I think, to tell people, not to force them, not to shout at them that you must believe it, but just to tell them that this information exists and that maybe they might be interested to have a look at it if they want to understand the world they're in better.
One of the things that I think is really most important at this moment is the FEMA camps and the impending martial law situation in the States. And people have a really hard time believing it, but there are how many camps now? Is it something like 150 or I don't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it depends on which source you go with, of course. And naturally enough, a lot of people deny this and they say that these camps are just perfectly normal or they're there in case of an incursion of Mexican immigrants or, you know, whatever that month's excuse is. I think there's certainly that we know as far back as things like, you know, the whole Operation Garden Plot and the Rex 84 programs that there have long been contingency plans, surely there must be, to basically intern the population of America should trouble arise. But of course, a lot of people think this has gone further than just being a contingency. And there's a lot of feeling that that's the whole plan. Hence, we have, I think, such passion being exchanged on both sides of the whole gun control walls. Now, I mean, we don't have this here in Britain, of course, but I can see that it is a very difficult thing because those people who believe there might well be a coup, a New World Order coup or whatever you want to call it, of course, don't want to give up their weapons because then they may feel completely, you know, at the mercy if they were to. And of course, that's why you get Alex Jones, of course, getting very impassioned on these TV programs. Anybody saying get rid of the guns. I think people outside of America don't always quite appreciate the issues, I have to say. And certainly living in a country like Britain where guns are relatively few and far between, people don't get it. But I think they don't quite see the bigger picture. I mean, you know, there are many ambiguities about the whole gun control issue. And obviously, who really likes guns? But equally, if you've got a lot of guns already there, then who comes in and decides who's suddenly not going to have them? So a lot of people feel that this is kind of building up to something that could become quite a serious situation if something were to tip the balance. And, you know, you could find, God forbid, let's hope this doesn't, but you could find some kind of civil war situation arising. And obviously, let's hope that doesn't happen. But I think, therefore, you need to address the issues that might lead to this so that it doesn't get to that fever pitch. There's no point just pretending these risks aren't there because you can see this stuff bubbling up and it would be much better if it didn't come to any kind of fruition.
Yeah, definitely. But we cannot discount the fact that there are all of these FEMA camps and supposedly they're to help people in times of strife or national emergency, but needless to say, nonetheless, there are some important factors here. Number one, America has the highest ratio of people in prisons of any country, even third world countries on the planet. And number two, these are equipped and ready to roll. Some of them brought forward by Jesse Ventura and other websites show that they're capable of housing 50,000, one of them is 100,000 people. And while people are saying, oh, that's nonsense, we must forget that America did inter Japanese citizens in World War II in camps. People have a short memory or they probably weren't born then, but the Japanese people were interred in camps. So the question is, what are these camps for? What are they thinking? What about the FEMA coffins? What is this all intended for? It's there. And you can certainly find the information if you're looking for it.
Yes, I mean, I think this is the thing, is that you can't just stick your head in the sand and say this is all complete nonsense. I think people owe it to themselves to find out more about this and explore it at some length, because then at least they know, like Thomas Paine said, they know then how to be prepared if there is any truth in it. And they also then they know what might be going on around them, and you can then make a fuss about it. And obviously, of course, it's denied. No one's going to admit that such things exist in places of authority. But, you know, the more people that keep raising a fuss, that we're going to get somewhere. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, just over here, a week or so back, we had one of the Bilderberg meetings take place in England. And there was a lot of people went down there and they raised a protest camp and there was like a festival. And indeed, people like Alex Jones and David Icke went along and they spoke there. And, of course, the media either ignored it for the most part or they sort of sidelined it. It got a little bit of reporting here and there, but they were made out, the protesters were made out to be, you know, very, very fringe. But the truth is, it did raise a debate about the Bilderbergs in the mainstream media. And it even inspired one of our MPs, Michael Meacher, to force one of the big Bilderberg attenders, a minister called Kenneth Clark, he forced him in the House of Commons to explain what his role in the Bilderbergs was. And that was extraordinary, because as far as I know, that was the first time the Bilderberg group had ever been discussed in our parliament. Now, that is a direct result of truth seekers raising awareness. And you know, the media can laugh and try to sideline them all they want, but the fact is they are now beginning to take the lead. And then when things like the PRISM system, you know, come to fruition in the public mind and we hear about it, suddenly you realize that a lot of this campaigning for freedom and truth has gone somewhere. Because I know some people say, oh, what's the point, it's all useless. Well, I think we're seeing a lot of evidence right now that it's not been useless. It's raised this stuff to a new state of awareness. And I would imagine that those in power, the ruling elite, are probably beginning to get a little bit concerned. Not too concerned, because I think they're arrogant enough to think they can just do what they want. But I certainly think they're going to probably start fighting back a lot harder, because they've realized that stuff like Bilderberg, it's going mainstream, and you're not going to be able to keep this out of the news much longer.
Oh boy, much harder than they're already doing makes me very uncomfortable.
Yes, of course. But I mean, you know, that's why we have to strike the balance, of course, you know.
Okay. What was your impression of Alex Jones's theatrics on BBS? He was quite hysterical, let's say. And although he was screaming out the truth, he really came off like a madman. And so he was portrayed on BBC. What do you think is behind that performance of his?
I mean, there's two views. I don't want to criticize Alex Jones, because he has been putting word of this stuff out there for a long time. And he clearly is passionate. He clearly cares. Now, there's two views on this. So whether he just allows that passion to kind of get the better of him, because these are very serious issues that are being discussed, and therefore he gets very excitable and doesn't realize how other people might see that, or as others have said, well, maybe the whole thing's a thing to discredit and he's an insider and all of this, which I don't really believe. But I think it leaves us with a little lesson. Okay, I'd like to believe that what we're seeing there is raw passion, and all power to people that put this stuff out there, because they're doing it where others aren't. So we should never forget that. But it does make me aware, certainly, that, yes, some people recoil from that approach. And I've always thought the best way to get this kind of material over to new people is to be as reasonable and rational as one can be. Now, you're always going to get people, you start talking about all of this conspiracy stuff and the alternatives and metaphysics, you're always going to get people who will laugh or say, well, come on, you know, I don't really believe that, you're just going a bit off the rails. But what I have always found is a bit of reasoned evidence, and I mean evidence and not just hearsay. If you've actually got evidence and you can quote people where they can go and find out more, it's really remarkable how quickly they will change. And as I say, I'm lucky enough to give lectures and presentations, not only to alternative groups and truth groups, but also to mainstream groups like, you know, Rotary groups and, you know, Women's Institute. People who don't normally come across this stuff. And I'm forever encouraged by the fact that they actually will listen. They will hear this stuff out, and often they will nod sagely at the end and say, yeah, I can see there's a case. The problem is, if you get up there and you rant, you say, you must believe me, I'm right, this is the truth. Of course, anybody is going to react against that. People naturally react against being told to believe something. And I think we always have to be ever so careful that, you know, we try to stay as grounded and balanced and adopt as reasonable a tone as possible. Because otherwise, of course, it does make it much easier for us to be written off as eccentrics. And that, of course, doesn't help us.
Which is unfortunate, because Alex Jones had a platform two times, one with Piers Morgan on CNN, and now another with BBC, and both times he ranted like a maniac. And so he managed to get into a mainstream situation, and instead of being able to utilize that to David Icke is very good speaking on mainstream media, of putting his point across and coming across credibly.
Well, I think, I mean, lest we forget, of course, David Icke himself was a TV interviewer already before he sort of crossed over into the alternative. So he knew how to handle things. And I agree. You know, he does a very good job.
Alex Jones is also a media person.
Well, he is now, but I don't know whether that was his background originally, whereas certainly Icke, he knew the tricks of the trade. He knew the kind of things that they would try to put on him to catch him out. And he's very good at kind of being ready for that and not reacting too much if somebody, you know, tries to put him on the spot with something and make him look stupid. But, I mean, these are things we all have to bear in mind, you know. It's not just on television. Some of us in the alternative world, you might find yourself being put on the spot just in the pub or amongst friends or amongst family around the dinner table. And these are the moments, the opportunities that you have to share this information. So, yes, if you foam at the mouth and just say, why don't you believe me? You're not going to get anywhere. But if you can give a few instances of things that actually people cannot instantly come up with an answer to. And, you know, in the case of 9/11, for instance, you could just throw a few physics questions to them, you know, and say to them, so you understand, do you, exactly how it was that the towers fell? Actually, most people don't know. They don't really know anything about it. So if you can then challenge them and come back with a few facts about the way buildings should act in fires, for instance, you're going to at least show them that you know your stuff. What doesn't work, and I've seen this in the crop circle world a lot, is when people, they're very desperate to be believed, so they start to add in just about any old very, very flimsy piece of information into the conversation to impress. And I find people discover that very quickly, and they'll come down on you like a ton of bricks. If they suspect that anything you're saying is even slightly exaggerated, of course they can uncover that and then pull the rug on everything you're saying. So that's not worthwhile. I think if you're very clued up, and I think anybody that's into this stuff, they owe it to themselves to really be informed and seriously read this stuff and know what they're talking about, then you're going to stand a better chance of getting somewhere. And certainly these are opportunities. So we should never shy away if these conversations come up in conversation. We should never shy away from standing in our truth and saying, well, this is what I believe and here is why I believe it. But it's always important to also say, I'm not asking you to believe it, but I can only tell you why I do. And that's very often when people will then open up and start to come over onto your side, because you're giving them the choice as to which way they go. And they tend to respect that.
And you do that very well. Not that I want to toot your horn, but that's one of the reasons why I've been attracted to your work and invited you to speak to my people, because you do that very, very well, and as you've done in the book. So here's a question for you. If you were invited onto the mainstream media, what would you feel was the most important thing to bring forward out of all the issues you describe in this book, all of the conspiracies from Diana, which I would have loved to talk about. I hope we have time. The overall New World Order, chemtrails, HARP. What do you, let's say that you were given the opportunity that Alex Jones had. What do you feel you would strive to bring through?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I have been on mainstream media a few times. And of course, what you find is you're very often not given very long. So, I mean, a very quick example, I think I recount this in the Truth Agenda book, but myself and Marcus Allen of Nexus magazine and another chap, we were invited onto a big TV program here called The One Show, very, you know, big viewing over here in Britain. We did, you know, 2 hours at least, interview, solid interview, good stuff discussed. And then the final edit, it had been cut down to less than half a minute. And, you know, we barely got to even say our names. So, you know, certainly anything that can be edited, you know, will be edited against you. So live TV really is the only chance you have. I mean, I think that what I would stress would be where we've started with this, which is that if you look around you, what's going on just in the mainstream everyday world and the revelations that are coming out, that they are only the tip of the iceberg. And this is very important because people need some peg of reality. When we talk about all this stuff, it can sometimes seem a bit removed from people's everyday lives. But when you introduce, for instance, the idea that, well, now you know that they could be looking at every email and all your phone calls and all of this, suddenly there is a talking point. And of course, I would then say, well, of course, a lot of people in our world have assumed this for years anyway. And right. Then you can start to open the doors to say, and yeah, basically there's a hell of a lot more going on under beneath all that. And this is the thing, is to latch onto something that people have now seen. And again, the Bilderbergs. So over here, the Bilderberg group has just had its meeting, and the apologists on the mainstream media kind of managed to imply, as they tried to in Parliament, when this minister had to answer these questions, well, it's just a business meeting. It's just a lot of jolly business chaps, people getting together, exchanging ideas. That doesn't hold water when you look at the reality of the impact that Bilderberg clearly has on the world. But so you could point that out, you know, say, well, you've all heard of the Bilderberg, but have you heard this, this, and this? So I think having a starting point is very important. And of course, things like 9/11, everybody remembers that. The danger we have with 9/11 at the moment, and I think it's the same phenomenon perhaps we've seen with JFK, the whole Kennedy thing, which, you know, inevitably I've written about in the new book because it needs to be covered. You get a feeling that those in power are hoping that the more the years go by, the more it will all fade into history and no one will really know what happened, but no one will really care. In the same way that with JFK, I mean, how many people really believe there was only one gunman? There's a few, but, you know, most of the world's population now accepts there must have been a wider conspiracy. But it seems too long ago that they don't feel compelled to act on it. And I think this is a danger that's coming in with 9/11. Yes, everybody remembers it, but now it's becoming sort of a bit nostalgic. Oh, where were you on 9/11? And the impact is being lost. And of course, we've got youngsters now growing up who don't remember anything about that. That doesn't mean anything to them, even though the upshot of that day has affected their lives. They may not know that. But that's why I think we do need to keep things like that alive. Because I think there is a danger that people are just hoping that it will all fade away and it'll be okay to think, well, maybe there was another side to the story, but we'll never know it now, so let's not bother to look. And I think we see that with a lot of things. And you mentioned Princess Diana there, and I think that's another example of something where it's generally assumed, certainly here in Britain, it is generally assumed she was assassinated. That's not what the press says. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at the polls, and I think I quote the polls in the conspiracies book, an enormous percentage of the population believe she was murdered. It doesn't matter what the inquests say. It doesn't matter what they say on the TV that you're meant to believe. In their gut instinct, and I've asked many audiences this before, taken straw polls, people feel she was murdered, as was David Kelly over the Iraq affair. And that's, I think, very, very important that, again, people do have their own minds. Okay. But equally, you could argue, but it's faded away enough now that it seems in the past enough that it doesn't really affect people's lives today. So they're not inclined to explore it anymore or think anymore. Although, of course, the real danger is that the kinds of people that would kill like that or try to shut down the truth must still be operating in our world today. So that's why we have to try to keep it as alive as we can. But yeah, I mean, I can't speak for polls outside of Britain on this, but certainly over here, David Kelly and Princess Diana, that proves that at heart, actually, most of us are conspiracy theorists, no matter what the media may tell you.
In your book, you say that you unabashedly state that she was pregnant with Dodi Al-Fayed's baby. Do you have any point of reference for that proof?
No, I don't state that at all. No, that's a mistake. I do not state that. What I do is say that that is a belief that some people have. I list a series of claimed facts that some people believe. Right. I am not asserting that. I'm going to be really, really clear there. I mean, to be fair, you know, there were medical tests, of course, taken on her. We are told she was not pregnant. And I don't know, but one of the issues would be that were she pregnant, then, of course, you've got the whole business of there will be a Muslim bloodline getting involved with the royal family. So one of the theories is that wouldn't go down too well in some quarters, so they had to get rid of her. But I list that as one possibility amongst many. I mean, you know, you've got to take your pick. It does seem there were people queuing up to assassinate Princess Diana, really. Quite a lot of people were more than happy to see her go. But even that, I mean, this is interesting. The Princess Diana affair, if you like, is much more complex than people think. And people think it's all black and white. And some people say, well, they got rid of Diana so Charles could marry Camilla and all of this. In fact, as I recount in the book, Diana herself, unless we forget, she wrote some pretty damning letters to people like her ex-butler, Paul Burrell. And the letters are accepted as genuine. And in them, she predicted that she would be killed in a car crash and that there was going to be an effort to murder her. And she also pointed out in one of the letters that it wasn't Camilla that Charles wanted to marry. It was, in fact, Tiki Leg Burke. Now, Tiki was the nanny to Princes William and Harry, who some people have accused Charles of having had a relationship with. And certainly that's what Diana believes. So she describes, in fact, in one of these letters, describes Camilla as a decoy, and that really wasn't what it was about. And it's interesting because there is some evidence that there might have been an attempt to assassinate Camilla as well, because not that long before the Diana crash, Camilla had a crash. And it did make some news at the time. She fled from the scene, allegedly, because she was in fear of her life. But some people think that was an attempt to kill Camilla in a car crash. Now, when that didn't work, one argument is that somebody sat down with Charles and said, look, you've got to sort yourself out. You can't marry Tiki. It's going to look too obvious. Do the decent thing. Marry Camilla. And, you know, now, once Princess Diana was dead, of course, you know, now things will be a bit clearer from here on. So there's a heck of a lot more to this. And also, lest we forget, Diana herself was quite a conspiracy theorist. She believed that one of her bodyguards, a man called Barry Manicky, she believed he had been murdered. He had died in a motorcycle accident. And she had gone on record as saying to friends that she thought that basically the intelligence services had killed him, because it certainly had been alleged that he had also had a relationship with Diana. So the whole Diana thing, the more you look into it, it gets more and more and more complex. And then you reach quite incredible things, like the owner of the white Fiat that certainly Mohammed Al-Fayed believed was the Fiat that was used that clipped the Mercedes on the night of the crash. Now, the authorities say they've never tracked down the white Fiat. Well, Mohammed Al-Fayed's detectives say they did. And that was made fun of until the owner, a man called James Van Dansen, the owner of that Fiat, was himself then found dead in another burnt-out car. He had bullet holes in his head, and his head had, in fact, been decapitated. And yet, apparently, the inquest ruled that a suicide. So I will leave listeners to make up their own minds about whether that was a suicide or not. But you can see here that it gets madder and madder the more you go down the rabbit hole. And then I think one of the most damning things around Diana is the fact that the hospital where she was taken in after the crash, now, it is said that the French doctors believed she would live. They didn't think she was too critically injured. And yet apparently some British doctors then turned up said, "Thank you very much. We'll take over from here." Escorted the French doctors out of the room, shut the door, and then Diana was dead a few minutes, I believe, even after that, which a lot of French doctors thought, well, how could that have possibly happened? But one of the French doctors that was going to go on the record about this then himself mysteriously died in a car crash, apparently. So this is, I'm afraid, the kind of thing that we hear again and again of key witnesses vanishing in strange circumstances or dying suddenly. So the Diana thing, some people make fun of it, but when you actually look at the details, there's certainly, I think, a lot of evidence that we have not been told the whole truth about it, but by a long chalk.
Nothing to make fun of about that, and I would invite people to read the book for more information about that, because you really present the case about what transpired there. We are out of time already, Andy. The time really flies when you're on, and I thank you. The book we have been talking about is called Conspiracies. I love the title, flat. Conspiracies, the facts, the theories, the evidence, the author, the wonderful Andy Thomas. His website is truthagenda.org. There are a lot of things you want to read from this man. He's a wonderful researcher, and as you've heard tonight, he is very clear about gathering information so that as much as possible, he's a credible, grounded alternative researcher. Andy, I thank you so much for coming back, and I'm sure you'll be back on again. Continue your great work, and let's hope that with the emerging information now with PRISM, more and more people will awaken to what we are trying to get out to the world. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Okay, everybody, this is Patricia Corey winding it up. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you, implores you to think outside the box of convention. And we have certainly done that today on the show with Andy Thomas. Next week is the 9 p.m. show, and I might just be playing a rerun because I will be immersed in my workshop. So tune in anyway. I'll have something wonderful on the show for you, and I'll be back soon. This is Patricia Corey signing out with a nano, nano. And by the way, soon night will fall, and I'll be watching the skies because there's a lot of activity up here over the islands. I hope to bring you more information. All right, everybody. This is Pat Corey signing out. Thank you. Be blessed. Be clear. Be in your truth.